Hello, everyone. This is Donna Fox, and you are listening to Akashic Wisdom. This show is dedicated to the Akashic Records and to helping humanity understand the importance and the depth of information that is at our fingertips when we choose to surrender to the energy of the Akasha. And we do that in a very special way. This program is also co-sponsored by Akashic Record Consultants International, and that website is arc-akashicrecords.org. And we are a body of folks, Akashic Record teachers and consultants, and was founded by Mary Parker. And our mission is to train and certify Akashic Record teachers and consultants for working in this energy to the highest form of integrity and purity. And what I am so excited about tonight is that we have Mary Parker, the founder of Akashic Record Consultants International, on the phone with us tonight. We're going to be interviewing Mary. I know that you're all waiting breathlessly to hear from her. We will be taking calls. I'd like to talk to her a little bit first before we start taking calls, because she has a history for us that is so rich, that is so insightful, and that is so down to earth that I really want to talk to her about the history of our prayer. And for those of you who are not familiar with Akashic Record Consultants International and our method, we access the Akashic Records through a holy prayer. And the prayer itself is a vibrational key. And this all came about when Mary was introduced to a man by the name of Johnny Prochaska. Now that's where I'm going to stop, and I'm going to let Mary take it from there. So welcome, Mary Parker,
thank you so much for
being on Akashic Wisdom Show.
Thank you for having me, Donna.
Oh, thank you. So I talked to Elena Lieberman, who was on the show last week. We were talking earlier today, and she and I, we would love to have you talk about the history of the prayer that we use, how it got here, its relationship to the Pleiades, how Johnny got it. And so can you share some of that with us, the story?
Yes. First of all, I'd like to say that there will be a book out that explains this more fully. It should be out sometime this fall. So,
and can people get that from you personally, or are you going to sell
from
it through
International? From the organization itself.
That's fabulous. That is fabulous. Okay.
So what would you like to know first?
Are your records open?
Yes.
Then you just go ahead and tell us what the record keepers want us to know.
Well, many years ago, a little gentleman came to our city, and I wasn't really too interested in other lifetimes at that time, and I went with some friends, and he taught us this prayer and taught us how to do this. And my first sense was that it couldn't possibly be anything that had any value. Well, when I went through that weekend and worked with other people with the prayer, it became very evident to me that it was a very powerful tool, and that it was also something that I was a little afraid to use because of my own inadequacies at the time. So many years later, after my husband died, about 12 years later, now during this time I had worked with a few people and doing this work, doing the consultations, but mostly just friends and family. And Johnny told us a story at that time of how he made a trip to Mexico, where he had dreamed for about 3 years of a little Mayan lady, and she had always been beckoning to him and telling him to come to her. And so he was walking the streets in the slums of Mexico City one day and saw this woman standing in the door, recognized her, and stopped and knocked on her door, and she gave him the experience of going to a place where he was given the records, he was given the prayer, and the prayer itself, I can only tell you what Johnny told me. I don't have a personal experience of this myself, but Johnny was given that prayer, and he did mention that the Pleiades were directly overhead when it was given to him, and I don't know whether there's a relationship there or not. So it might be fun to go into your own records and check that out. I do know that that this is a very powerful tool and a very loving and gentle experience. To work with it with people and the method that we have tried to bring forward through ARC, where we all work from the highest integrity and honor the work that we're doing, is the most blessed thing I've ever done in my lifetime. And it's just a wonderful tool.
Well, it is. It's changed people's lives over and over again. It certainly has changed my life. I know that, and I know that it's changed your life. When you first met Johnny, I'm curious, how many folks were in that class that you went to?
There were about 20, I believe, 20 people.
And at the time,
Carrot that went ahead and did any of the work.
Say that again?
There were only two ladies that were there, two friends of mine that carried it any further than that weekend.
Other than yourself, you mean?
Yeah.
So there was yourself and two other people, two of your friends that actually carried the work further. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, they used it for their personal lives and with friends and family.
Right, right. And that's what we know is that it seemed that the whole reason the classes were going on were basically to find you, Mary Parker.
Well, thank you. I certainly didn't feel like it the night I went to the class.
I'm sorry?
I would like to mention that after my husband died, I hadn't worked with but just very few people. I didn't tell people that I did this or anything. And after he passed away in 1988, I drove up the mountain at Cloud Cross, New Mexico.
And so to White Cloud Mountain? Wasn't that the name of the place you stopped?
Cloud Cross Mountain.
Okay.
Yeah. And I stopped by that little stream that runs down through there, and I was just looking down, and I prayed to God to please tell me what I needed to do with my life. Up until this point, most of my life had been dedicated to my family and my husband. And so that, when I got down to the town of the lady that I was going to visit at the bottom of the mountain in Alamogordo, New Mexico, she had months worth of appointments lined up for me. So I got really dumped into it, and then at the end of that period, while I stayed there and did all of that work, and then at the end of that period, seven of those people asked for a class.
Uh-huh.
And so I was not a trained professional by any means, but I made note cards and I got ready for the class and I did all those little things you do to prepare. Well, when I got there, I opened my records and I never looked at the notes. And from that point, the word spread from that class to other people that wanted the class, and we traveled for a minute throughout the United States and Canada with it.
Right. And then when you say we, you're talking about you and Ed?
Yes, Ed. Ed was my friend that offered to drive me all these places.
Right. Well, Mr. Ed Conmee is the gentleman who actually brought you to Chicago, isn't it? Is that right?
Yes. He brought me to Chicago for the first meeting, and that's where I met Alan Lieberman.
Uh-huh.
And he went home and told Elena about me. And so that's been a long-term friendship now for many years.
Yes, it has. And what's interesting is that Elena and then she and Ronnie, her sister, became really involved with working with the records. And about, I want to say that about seven years after she was involved with the records, myself and Linda Siglico and Julie and Linda Berger came forward, and we all were named teachers at one time. Do you remember that?
Yes, I do.
I've got to tell you, Mary, that when we were in Rodosio, New Mexico, at my first teacher's retreat, which was kind of the first, quote-unquote, official teacher's retreat. I got a chance to read your records, and you know what? That was the most honoring time. And for our listeners, what I should say, in the very beginning, it was before Akashic Record Consultant International was formed, there were really not a lot of teachers. Well, there still aren't as many as we need, but there were the teachers involved. There were Elena and Mary, and then there was a few of us that came forward that wanted to become teachers, and we were named to become teachers at that time, right under Mary under Elena and Mary. And that me becoming a teacher was from a series of going to Chicago on a regular basis quite a bit and bringing the records to Cleveland. But what was interesting is that it's like my test, if you will, or my I think that I felt like it was my honoring, my qualifying, my graduation, my everything. When you said, "Okay, Don, it's time for you to read my records," but I'll tell you, my heart was in my throat.
It was. You weren't doing it, though, were you?
I'm sorry.
You weren't doing the reading.
I did the reading for you. That's part of my teacher accreditation, huh?
It was the record keepers that were giving you.
Well, that's true. That's right.
We need never be nervous about it because we're not doing it.
Well, no, you're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. See, but I was saying is that even though I knew that, and once I opened the records, it was fine. It was the idea that I was going to do it. And, you know, even to this day, there are teachers out there, and I know there are consultants out there, and we all, they're very special people in our lives that we honor and respect. There's a little bit of trepidation sometimes about, you know, you want to do the right thing. And as soon as you open the records, for me anyway, it all goes away because the record keepers take over without taking control of me or anything like that. It's not that way, ladies and gentlemen who are listening. It's more of a sweet, powerful...
It is a very sweet, loving energy.
Loving energy that comes forward and you really stand in the space of love and literally repeat what you hear. So it's not about anything entering your body. It's clearly not me talking. Even though it's my voice, I am repeating. I just basically show up and do what I'm told, and that's the best way that I explain it.
And that's, to me, when I enter into the records, it's a feeling of truly being immersed in God's grace.
Exactly.
Just totally.
It's divine energy, for sure. Absolutely. But can we talk a little bit more about what else you remember about Johnny himself? Because I really want to have you on again so that we can continue this, because we're going to probably be taking calls in a minute and people are going to want to talk to you. But what else do you remember about Johnny and the way he taught then opposed to when he... the way we teach now, or what we learn now?
Well, his teachings were relatively simple, and just to walk into the room and enter into that energy, it really didn't seem like anything was happening. But when you get there, and for one thing, he was an interesting person in his own right. He was a water official over the head of the water department in Phoenix, Arizona.
Oh, okay.
And so he had stumbled into this. He hadn't been involved in any so-called New Age things or mystical things or anything like that when he went to Mexico and this all happened. So I can just imagine what it must have been to have him experience the experiences he had there. But the way we teach now, we've been given so many good guidelines And he didn't have the guidelines and things like that. You used the prayer, and that was it, you know, and you didn't have a lot of guidelines and things like that. So it was a simplistic way of doing it, but it worked for people. And it's continued to be, it still works for people, but sometimes we get a little caught up in the, not the guidelines especially, but just since it's been organized, just the organization itself.
Right.
I don't know where I talked to Johnny. He came out to Odessa three times.
Huh.
And the third time he came out, well, I had a little study group going, a little unity study group, and he came to visit that and gave us lectured for us. And we had an open forum after the lecture. And it was very enlightening just to sit there and watch the change that came over people in the audience when he spoke.
Uh-huh.
And yet, like you mentioned, we never, when we open ourselves up to this energy, it's not that we go into a trance reading or anything like that, although that's okay too, I guess. But
not with the records, though.
You're just totally clear with everything, and yet it's like you feel this peace in your heart, and you hear yourself saying things that you absolutely have no recollection of having the knowledge there. So it's been interesting. The last time he came through, he told me he was planning on retiring in Mexico, and he was coming up for retirement very soon. And I didn't hear any more from him after that. Of course, I never did particularly correspond with him or anything.
Yeah, he was originally from Spain, though. He was Czechoslovakian. He's from Spain, right?
This is the story he told me. He was from Spain. He was a cousin to King Juan, who is now the king of Spain. He would have been about the same age as King Juan. So I'm sure that they played his children in the court there.
Uh-huh.
But for something, his father was German, his mother was Spanish. And for some reason, his father was cast out, and they ended up moving to this, there's an elite group in Mexico City that's in Spain, that they're still living under a lot of the old laws of the sacredness of Spain and the way the court was run, and they choose the children are engaged, betrothed at birth when they're born. So that's how he ended up in Mexico City after he left there when he was a young man and came into the States, and he never had been back, and he went back because this young friend of his was going to marry, was betrothed to a girl that lived in this community, and he proceeded to go down there to help translate because they didn't know whether the girl knew English or not.
Huh.
And so it ended up that they had taught her English, so he wasn't needed, but he was going to fly back with this other man, so he wandered around in Mexico City for some time there and met a couple in a restaurant one day that took him to their home and kept him, asked him if he could sit in, house sit for them while they went on an extended trip for about a week, and he said he could, and they had a complete library of all kinds of books and things about every mystical thing you could want to think about. And so he moved on into, he read that whole time he was there just about, but he had taken a break from his reading the day he went out and met the little lady that he dreamed about for 3 years.
How did she transfer the prayer? The Mayan woman is the one that had the prayer that Johnny translated, is that right?
No, she did not have it when he met her.
Okay.
But they went to a place and it was given to him by her at that time. It was presented to her and then it was placed on him, so.
Was that where was that at?
I don't know exactly. All I know is they walked for all day and all night to get there, and it was out somewhere out of Mexico City where there was an old Mayan temple. Now, I don't know whether this correlates with what the history of the country is or not. I'm just telling you what I heard.
Oh, no, there's Mayan ruins in a lot of different places. But I guess the reason I say that is because, like, in our manual, we say that, it's a compilation of, I think, of your story and then what the community got from the records on this, and then to create the level one manual, and then, but in it, it says that Johnny received the prayer through ceremony.
Uh-huh.
And that he agreed to be like the messenger of the Akasha. I'm paraphrasing there, but mm-hmm. but basically he got the prayer from her. So in ceremony, she was. Were there other people there? Did he ever tell you, or is it just her and him? And the prayer was brought forward to her. I'm so curious.
That's all a very beautiful story, but. I don't know if we have time to go deeply into it, but
oh yeah, we do.
Okay, we walk.
Okay, go for it.
They walked to this place, and they went into a little covered part of vines growing over this doorway, and they went in there and they rested. And one of the things that happened, she looked like a very old woman when they were doing this walking. Yet she never seemed to tire, and she lay down and told him to rest that they would. Sleep through the day and go to where they were planning to go the next next evening. And so he was watching her as she went to sleep, and it was like there was an aura around her of just a really strange, you know, interesting looking halo type thing. And that so he went to sleep, and they got up the next evening and walked to the main pyramid in this cluster where there were several buildings and sat down on the bottom step, and she told him that someone would be there shortly to visit with them and to carry on what they were there for. So as the evening got deeper and he got afraid because he thought, well, I'm way out here. I don't know where I'm at. I don't know how to get back. What happens to me if something happens to this little lady?
Yeah.
And so she turns around and tells him, don't create from fear. Everything that's created from fear is not real. And so he went ahead and regained his composure, and there appeared a group of people began to come in to the pyramid, or come up to the pyramid from out of the surrounding countryside, and they looked like they're from every race of time and every country and every, not just South American countries, but people from all over the world, and they were dressed in native costumes, and there was total silence. No one spoke. And it was at that time that she told him, he asked her, he said, why are they silent? And she said, they have no one to be their voice. And she said, that's what you're here for tonight. I'm paraphrasing this, Donna.
No, that's okay,
it's
Mary.
It's in the book more accurately. But
sure.
Anyway, he agreed, after finally thinking about it, he agreed to be their voice. And so that's when there were several, looked like Mayan kings standing on different steps on this pyramid. And one of them came down, and he had this very delicate gold leaf papyrus thing on his, or very strange writing on it, on a stone. And he brought it down, and the little lady took that off the stone and placed it on the top of his head, and that's where the prayer came from.
And so basically what you're saying is the energetically, when she placed that on his head, it was downloaded into his being.
Well, you can say that. I don't know how you put describe that.
Well, I guess that's the words I would use. If somebody puts a piece of paper on my head and I don't read it, but yet I know what it says, mm-hmm. somehow it was downloaded into my mind or my being.
And it's the prayer itself has been criticized because they say it's not grammatically correct, but it was probably given to him in Mayan and then he translated it into Spanish somewhere.
Right.
And then it was translated into English, so
right.
That could happen.
Oh, sure. Well, but we both know that it really has nothing to do with how grammatical it is. It's all an energetic key.
It's all an energetic key. It's like a key that fits the lock that opens the records.
Right. And don't you find it curious that he taught some classes, but you're the only one of all those people that ever took it to a bigger level?
That is strange, because I know he taught hundreds of people. He taught all over the country.
He did.
The Southwest, anyway.
Huh.
And in fact, somebody, I believe it was Eleanor, ran into a lady in North Carolina that had been in one of his classes.
And,
but,
you know, I've never
heard of anybody else. I had one of those two friends of mine that went with me, taught for a while in Austin. But she taught it totally, I mean, she taught it pretty much the same way, but her classes were only 4 hours long. Well, you can't really grasp the depth of it in 4 hours like that.
Yeah, but you can't do that.
She passed away just 2 years after she started teaching, so.
Say that, I didn't hear that.
She passed away two years before she, right after she started teaching, so.
Oh, interesting. Wow.
She never taught
but
much.
You know what's interesting, too, is that, I had it in my mind and it just went away. I guess I just need to stew on that one for a minute.
Well, he told all of us at the time that we took the class that if we worked in this earnestly and felt like that we were ready to go out and teach it, that by all means do that. Well, I never had any intentions of doing that. You know, I never had any intention of doing that.
Well, I think that's sometimes the beauty and purity of this work is that, at least I know it's for me, that just staying pure within the intention of being of service ends up taking you to places you never would expect it to go.
That's what my prayer was the day I stood by the stream, was I asked to be of service, but I didn't know what that looked like, so please guide me into it. Went to the bottom of the hill, and there it was.
And there it was. Well, you know, I tell you, I had a level one here in Cleveland today, actually yesterday and today, and I know Elena had a level one in Chicago this weekend, and I haven't checked the website to see who else was teaching this weekend, but I think there was something else going for some teachers and training up at Sky Island in Alabama. So there was a lot of records work energy going on this weekend.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that I told my class to call in, and I know that Elena announced it to her class as well. And we've got a caller already, so just hold on, caller. And I have an email message from one of our students that her name is Julie, and she's actually from Sedona, and she wanted to say, if she didn't get through, to be sure to, and here's a direct quote for you, Mary. She goes, "Tell Mary thank you for all the work she has brought in. I'm unable to hook up tonight, but I'm still thinking of you." So she wanted to send that message to you to say thank you for her profound work. What's so fascinating to me is how deeply and profoundly people move into the records after just a day or two of learning and move farther from that point. It's just, it's awe-inspiring, it's humbling.
It just goes on and on.
Mm-hmm. It does. And it gets even better and better. So we have a caller on the line.
Yes.
Hello, caller?
Hello.
Is that Elena?
This is Elena calling in.
Now, ladies and gentlemen, just to kind of give you the full spectrum here, we now have two of the most prolific and deeply resonant women when it comes to the Akashic Records. Not that the rest of us teachers aren't good, but these ladies, they won't like it if I say this, but I'm going to say it anyway. They are our master teachers, and we all love them deeply and honor their words. So, Elena, thank you for calling in.
Well, thank you, and it's a great pleasure to hear Mary talk about the records and filling us in on the early work of Johnny.
Yeah.
We're never really clear on it and some of the things that happened. And certainly Mary has been a great teacher and one of the outstanding influences of my life.
Thank you, Elena, that you've been... She was especially chosen, you know. She was
yes.
the first teacher that we were on the phone one night just chit-chatting, and suddenly I heard myself saying, you're supposed to start teaching. Do you remember that, Elena?
Yes, I do. Yeah, it was really something. So
yeah.
I wanted to thank you, and we had a class today, too. I did ask them to listen tonight, especially about these early years with the records work. And I was wondering if you would share some of the things that come to your mind as outstanding events that occurred in the records for you while you the years that you've been teaching. Certain events may stand out in your mind.
Oh, there's so many. I can't seem to settle on any one thing. Have I told you something you could remind me of?
Well, what, you know, your records are open, Mary. Go ahead, ask the record keepers what they want to talk about.
My first experience was in that class, and that was very a profound experience because I went there. I was totally grounded in a church, and I had no idea that I was ever going to do anything like this or work with it in any way. And I didn't think I'd be able to do it. You know, I thought these other people could learn how, but I probably wasn't going to learn how. So I had a lady that I was doing a reading for, and it was my first one. And so from the records, what I saw, she was afraid to walk through a doorway. In fact, it had gotten so bad, the phobia had gotten so bad, that her husband had just forced her to come to this meeting that night. She wouldn't even leave her home.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I started, I opened the records, and she asked me about this fear, and the first thing I saw was her going into a pyramid with some paint pots in her arms because she was going in to paint some hieroglyphics on the wall in the pyramid. And the person that had asked for that job was angry about that, and they had hired some of the slaves as she came out of the pyramid. They dropped a big stone block on her. And I thought, oh, this is silly. I'm just making all this up. And so she's going to think I'm crazy. Anyway, I told her that, and she burst into tears. And I thought, boy, I've done it now. So when she got a little bit of calmer, she told me, she said, I have to tell you, I didn't know about this phobia she had. She had mentioned that she had a phobia, but she didn't tell me what it was. And so she told me then what had happened, and I said, well, I hope this helps it. And she said, I think it'll do away with it. Well, about 3 months later, I ran into her husband on the streets, and he stopped me, and I said, how's your wife doing? And he said, you have created a monster. I can't keep her out of the mall. So that was one of my experiences. And I had a few. Nearly all of my experiences in the records, for one thing, have been very, very gentle and loving and not stern or telling somebody they're going to die or anything like that. I had another experience that was in Friendswood, Texas, and I was doing a reading for a gentleman who has an art gallery there. And he had been, I'd never met him before. This friend of mine took me there. And that was before I started telling anybody I did it. She had to tell him that that's what I did. And he had had a reading by this David, I can't think his last name right now, but he was had been a known reader throughout the country for many years. And he had just had one by him a couple of weeks before that, but he didn't tell me anything about it. You know, didn't tell me that he had had it. So he had me do this reading for him, or this consultation, and he was told in this consultation to be very careful for the next few weeks, because that there was some danger coming, but if he was really careful, it could be avoided. And so I went my merry way. He gave me an ivory bracelet. I wasn't charging money back then. So he gave me an ivory bracelet, one of the last ones that he brought back, you know, that he brought back the ivory from Africa before it became illegal. And not long after that, I was his secretary called me, and she said, I just wanted to tell you, because he had told her about what I'd said. And they were closed on Mondays, and he went into the, or she went to started to go to the shopping and drove by the gallery and noticed that she just felt uneasy, and she said, I'm going to go back and check things. There was no cars there or anything, but she just felt uneasy. Well, when he stepped out of his house that morning, as he backed his car out of the garage, there were men standing on either side of the driveway with shotguns. And they took him to the gallery. He had just made a trip to Africa and brought back diamonds and emeralds and all sorts of things. And they took him to the gallery, took as many jewels as they wanted and some of his work, and then hit him in the head and left him there for dead. And she came by just a few minutes after this happened, and he was still conscious, and she called called the emergency crews, and he ended up in the hospital, had a concussion, and was out of work for a while. But he said if I had just known for sure what was going to happen, and I said, well, you probably would have if I'd been doing records longer. But I could just see, you know, a darkness around him, and so that was not one of my favorite consultations, because I don't like to give people bad news. But he swore that saved his life. And so he felt like that there was an energy of protection that comes from having a reading. Now, this was his interpretation of it, that there was a protection that came with having the readings done that caused an avoidance of major problems sometimes. And over the years, I've watched that happen repeatedly with people, so there is I've got a little bit of information on that, but not enough that I've got it clear in my mind yet.
Wasn't there another incident with some police where you were protected?
Oh, yeah.
That's a pretty good
ride
incident.
In Santa Monica?
Yes.
I had a young man he's a little minor movie actor out there that was in some of the little girl with the pigtails. Those movies. I can't think of her name right now. Pepe Longstocking.
Okay.
And anyway, he wanted to. I'd done several readings when I was out there, and so her consultations, and he came to my room, and we were doing the reading, and kept saying, "I'm so bored. My life is so boring." And right in the middle of the reading, I was told by the record keepers that we were going to go to dinner when we got through. I said, we're supposed to go to dinner right now. And he said, right now? I said, yeah, and we're supposed to leave the records open. To me, that was unusual to go out in public with them open. And so we went out and got in his car and started down the street. And this was in Santa Monica. And we saw this car that was turned in, parked slanting, and even up on the curb a little bit. And the front windshield it was shattered, not completely broken, but just like somebody bumped their head on it or something. And I said, we need to stop and check this because somebody may need help there. They may have had an accident and been hurt. So he got out of the car and went over and was looking in the car, and there, he didn't try to open the door or anything. He was just looking in. And these guys came out of an alley, one of them with one arm much longer than the other one. And he asked them what's up, and they just looked at him, and he said, well, he saw blood on this guy. He said, if you're hurt, there's an emergency room right down the street here, and told him how to get there. And they just stood and looked at him. And then one of them started around the front end of the car and the other one around the back end. And he had dark windows on his car, so they couldn't see me in there. Well, when they started around that car, I just opened the door just enough to let them know that somebody else was in there. And he came, got in the car with me. Well, we took off, and they started following us. And we had a fast chase through Santa Monica and lower Los Angeles for about 30 or 40 minutes trying to find a policeman. Normally they're everywhere out there, and we couldn't find a police car or one on the street or anything. Finally we pulled in the police station in Los Angeles, the edge of Los Angeles, and told them what was happening, described the car, and we got the license number. And come to find out, they had had a shooting. They had gone in and had some kind of, I don't know what was the purpose of it or anything, but six people had been shot and were laying in a parking lot behind this apartment building up in that alley where they came out. So that was a gun that guy had, that his arm was long, one arm was longer than the other one. So that one was kind of scary, but I was doing a lot of calling on the record keepers and praying and everything.
Bet you were.
But when we got to the restaurant, we went to the restaurant then to eat dinner after he talked to the policeman about it. And I said, well, are you bored now? And he said, gosh, no. And he said, I'm never going to be bored again.
Well, I'll tell you what, I'm going to just stop for a moment and tell people, if you're out there and you'd like to call in, there, we do have one line available for your call, or if you're in Canada, you can call in at 888-815-9756, because I think, Elena, you're probably on the 800-877.
Yes, I am, and you know what, I'll hang up so other people can call in, but I just want you to know, Mary, that you have been a profound influence on my life, and we love hearing these stories, and it makes the work very meaningful to hear about all the things and the inspiration that you have given people over the years and the things that have happened and what your insights are through the records. So God bless
you.
You
have been a great light in this work, Elena.
Thank you. Say that again, Mary. We didn't hear you.
She's been a great light. Elena's been a great light in this work. And Donna, you have too. You've been our main promoter for many years now.
Yes.
So.
Yes, Donna has done a wonderful job, and her classes are outstanding. She's reaching a lot of people through the media and as well as directly through her consultations and her classes. So thank you for everything, and I'll get off the line so other people can.
I didn't mean to let you go. I wanted to say that there was a direct line open if somebody wanted it. You're welcome to stay on the line, Elena. The direct line, I just wanted to give it to people, though, is 530-876-3222, and the Canada one is, again, is 888-815-9756. So it's not like they can't call in. It's just that I want...
Well, this is a toll-free one.
Exactly.
Yes. Okay, so. Well, thank you, Mary, for everything.
You.
And I loved hearing about the origin of the prayer. That was really
great.
Thank you.
Well, that book will be coming out in the fall, hopefully, by the time we have conference.
Great. And Elena, thank you for changing my life, too. So I think she hung up.
Yeah, I think so.
Okay, well, blessings to you, Elena. Thank you so much for calling in. We, you know, the two of you have just been so integral in my life to change it. People ask all the time, Mary, what's your soul's purpose and all that? And that's a very important question. And I feel totally and completely blessed to have found my soul's purpose in working with the records. What I say to people is many are called and
and few answer, and so I'm so glad I answered, and I'm so glad you did, too. We have another caller on the line. Hi, caller.
Hi.
Who is this?
My name is Marilyn.
Hi, Marilyn. Where
Hi.
Are you from?
From Illinois.
Okay, great, Marilyn. Are you a student of the Akasha, or you're just curious?
Well, I'm more than curious, but I'm not a student per se. I'm
okay.
interested in, and I'm trying to learn more.
Well, that's great. Do you have a question for Mary or myself?
Well, I, in general, can you open my records?
We can't open your records now because we'd need your current legal name, and we're not necessarily doing readings on the radio.
Okay.
I mean, it's kind of hard for us to do that right now.
That's a personal, private thing.
Yeah, it's a very private thing.
I understand. Well, if you could answer this then, how does linear time and interpreting the Akashic records, how do you do that, you know, in terms of past, present, and future? And
that's a great question. Go ahead, Mary. You want to answer that?
I'll let you take it, Donna. I might fill in something, but go ahead.
Okay. All right. So the question is that you want to understand how past, present, and future work within the records as in relationship to what?
Well, for example, if you were reading for someone, and
yeah.
you would have to put it in some kind of perspective. And are you hearing that it, or how do you know what timeline it is?
Oh, good. Okay.
I guess let me just say that I'm sort of assuming that you could read the future as well.
No.
Okay.
We don't read the future. What happens is that one of the things that's really important. I mean, Mary alluded to the way things were happening in the future with the other things that she was doing. Those consultations that she did were a long time ago. The energy has actually changed, and we don't consider ourselves in any way, shape, or form psychic because we're not reading the future. We're reading the probabilities. If future comes up, they could be probability. Because we're working with free will choice. We help people in the here and now understand more and gain more clarity in their life. Now, future, because when we come in, we have so many different probabilities and possibilities, to lock somebody in on just one thing is not serving them. It's not empowering them. And so when we work with the Akashic Records, the energy source of the Akasha, as I've been trained from Elena and Mary, is that the energy source is the heart connected to the mind or crown chakra that goes to source. And when a psychic is reading from the third eye, and the energy is peripheral. So it's you're reading the energy around the person. So what's true today may not be true tomorrow. There is a psychic aspect or component to the records, but we don't necessarily access it unless on a regular basis, unless it would serve the client in the here and now. Would you now, Mary? I'll throw that to you. Will you want
okay.
to fill in on that?
Well, I'm in agreement. Well, wait, just to look at it from a literal angle, there's any decision that we make toward the future is going to change anything that's happening out there anyway.
Yeah, as
so,
we make it to our decisions today create our future.
It's not fixed. It's the fact that
exactly.
we build our own future by our present. So
right.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if that answers your question, Mary.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I understand that. I guess I was a little bit confused because I remember Mary when you were you know immediate future probability. You were speaking about. The fellow out in California, but that clarified it a lot. And then
sure, because that was imminent. That was within minutes. Do you see what
right,
I mean?
Yeah.
It was, and it had to do. It also had to do with that comment. From what my records are open right now. From the comment that's being made by the record keepers is that was imminent, and it was actually an answer to his request that his life was so boring.
Uh-huh.
A very graphic answer.
And so they gave him something to be on board about, I guess. But they were protected, and that was the important piece. I'm sorry, go ahead.
And just, I know I've heard you refer to the records being open. Are there times individually as a reader or the record keepers where the records aren't open? Is that an individual thing, or is that a broad sweep?
What? Go ahead.
The thing of it is, I'm sorry, would you repeat the question, please? I got confused.
Yes, I just wanted to understand better why the records would be closed sometimes and open on others.
Well, really, it would be distracting to your daily life if your records were open all the time.
Right.
Because it takes a certain amount of focus and everything within the prayer, use of the prayer. But also, whether you've ever been trained with the prayer or not, we all spontaneously, before we ever learn anything about the records, tap into it.
Right.
We all think it's like just our intuition or something, but there's a lot of things that we consciously know are the best way to go or to do. And it's just your records are probably open at that time. Just anybody taps into it unconsciously. We're doing it with a pure intent to go deeper into whatever's happening for the other person or for ourselves. We also work on ourselves a great deal with the records.
Right.
Did that answer your question?
I just want to clarify one more point for anybody else that's listening. What we do here with the methodology that Akashic Record Consultants International teachers and consultants use is a holy prayer that was brought forth by and translated by Johnny Prochaska that Mary ended up training everyone on. And when we say our records are open or our records are closed, is that when we say our records are open, we have formally moved into the light and use the prayer to formally open our records. And then when we are done with our work, so for example, when this show is over in a few moments, I'm actually going to close the records of this show as well as my own. I'll do that on the air. As well as but I will not share the prayer that we used to open the records ever on the air. That would never be shared, only in a workshop for people who are called to the work. At the other hand, is when Mary was talking about healers will spontaneously drop into the records. People in dreams, but the difference is they drop in, they're not sure exactly how they got there, they're not sure what to do when they're there, and they're not exactly sure how to get back or even how to get back in. And what our methodology
or
teaches...
Or they're in there, for that matter.
I'm sorry?
They're not even aware they're in there.
Yeah, sometimes they don't even know they're there. But the idea is what our methodology teaches is a way to get in on a regular basis and actually extract the information that is important for that person's life on an individual basis. And then we have at level two where you learn how to read other people's records, and a level three that is deepening of all that work. And all those classes are listed on the website with Akashic Record Consultants International on our website, and all the teachers are there. I have a class coming up in Philadelphia that's not on the website yet, and also one in San Diego that's not up on the website. But there, you can find teachers and classes all over the country by going to that website.
Okay, I see.
Is that helpful?
Well, yes, I have a lot to learn, but I want to thank you both.
Well, we hope you learn in Illinois. You know, the lady who was just on, Elena Lieberman, is right in Chicago.
She is. Oh.
Mm-hmm. And you can find all of her information by going up on that website, and you can call her directly. Right there. She's right in Chicago, and she does consultations, and her sister, Ronnie Reisler, is right in Chicago. We have other teachers. Joe Shaughnessy is right in Chicago. I'm off the top of my head, I can't remember who else is in Chicago. Rosa Rosa. I mean, I can give you a whole... There's a whole list of people in Chicago
for you. Okay. Well, thank you again.
Oh, thanks for listening, and please tell your friends The way this show continues and grows is for people to tell their friends. Thanks for calling in, Marilyn. We appreciate it.
Okay. Good night.
Good night. Hey, Mary.
Mm-hmm.
We have about 30 seconds before we we're actually over a little bit, but we have about 30 seconds before we have to get out of here. Do you have any closing comments?
Yes, I just want to thank you for having me and bless all those. I said a special prayer as I open my records tonight that everyone that's listening be given a special blessing at sealing the presence in their hearts of the love that's in the records. And I want to thank you, Donna, for the promotional work you've done for us and for your blessings and the great things you've done for me personally.
Oh, thank you. Well, first of all, thank you for the blessing, and thank you for being in my life. And I want to just say to everyone out there that this is a special time. We're going to have you back, Mary, because this is just too much fun. Next weekend, it's all call-in, so everybody can call in and get their questions answered as much as you want. And the week after that, Rosemarie Swanson, the president of Akashic Record Consultants International, is going to be here on August 12th. So we're going to have a full lineup, and at this point, I'm going to say if you'd like to call me, you can get my number by going up to bbsradio.com, and you get all my information's right there. I'm going to make that real simple. But right now, I want to say thank you to the masters, teachers, and loved ones. We ask that all those who are listening, may their hearts be opened, their burdens be lifted, and may they truly look into the mirror and see into the heart of the divine. And with that, we close the records by saying amen, amen, amen. The records are now closed. Amen. Have a wonderful week, everyone. See you next Sunday. This is Donna Fox. Bye-bye.